Dit is SBS Dutch.
It all started with the podcast. What made you make that podcast?
Well, I did a Bachelor of Audio. So I played in a band all my life and was a songwriter. I did a lot of murals and so on. And I always did music on the side. But, you know, when I sold my songwriting business, I thought, you know what, I want to do a Bachelor of Audio. And so the capstone of that bachelor was you had to come up with some sort of project that used audio. And so I'd already thought about this because my dad has quite a fascinating story. I mean, it's just, I can't believe some of the things, but he's got all documents and things that prove it all. Like when Hitler shot himself, my dad was only 50 meters away in a bunker in the middle of Berlin. And so they could see Hitler's bunker and they could see all the Russians were concentrating their attacks on that, and then they just pulled the shut down, went back down in, and I'm just amazed that when the Russians finally opened their bunker that they didn't kill them all, because wow, they only survived for about a week on the water that had dripped down into the bottom of the bunker and grains of rice, which when they put it in the put it in their mouth with some water, it blew up a little bit like chewing gum and they could last for a bit longer. But it was just endless little stories of surviving. I don't know how he did. And the things he saw were so horrific. I don't know how he's functioning as a human being, because if I saw that even on a movie, it would stay with me all my life. And that's why I think a lot of these people that I've interviewed, I want to trace back to the war. So I'm not just talking about, oh, when they arrived here, this is what happened. I want to work out, well, what were the motivations for them coming to Australia? And a lot of them said, we were so sick of the war, we wanted to find a new country that was peaceful, find a country that was as far as it could be away from what had happened in Europe. And off they went. And a lot of them didn't even know where Australia was. They didn't know anything about it because there was no internet or TV or things like that back then. And off they went, you know.
Mm. How did it evolve from a podcast to a documentary series?
Well, the podcast actually did really well in America. It won a couple of awards. And so I knew there was something here. So I went to the Bongilla Migrant Experience, it's called, and asked them, do you have any recorded versions of migrants, of video or anything like that? And they said, well actually, we don't. And I thought, that was a travesty, you know. How could you not? You've kept the buildings, but you're not keeping the people's stories. That's more important than the buildings, I think. And so I offered myself and made a contract with them to start recording people. And so I was pitching the idea of them having listening stations where you would lift up a phone, see a photograph of what the migrant might look like when they came, and you'd listen to their story. But they said, well, actually, it might be better if you do video, because we've tried these listening stations and people don't last on them at long. If you do video, they stay longer. So I then learned filmmaking. And so then, even though I was continuing to make another podcast about Bongilla, I actually would tape them every time I recorded just their vocals so that I had video as well. And then they put these up on televisions in the huts around the camp, and now people can come in and hear a story from start to finish about what the people that came in through the camp felt like. And that's how I ended up, this is a step before the documentary, I ended up making a live show where we would have two screens on stage, one which showed their interviews, the second one had their home movies, their photographs, documents, and then I would play on stage with a grand piano and a string quartet. And it was very emotional whenever we've played it, because if it's not just migrants wanting to come and see it, it's actually the descendants who hadn't known anything about the place, and they hadn't asked their parents, because some of them had said, I don't want to talk about that. We're not talking about the war, and we're not talking about all that stuff. Let's just think about the future. Or they never asked them. And so when this show took off and was very successful, I've just come back from Sydney, did a few shows there, done shows all around Victoria, I saw that this had legs. And so that's why I cut it up, made it a documentary, and it's actually been picked by the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival and will be screening on Friday, July the 25th at Cinema Nova in Lygon Street. So it's a great, I reckon this is great for the migrants because it gives them voice. It tells a really crucial part of Australian history where we don't hold back anything. We let them tell the stories, warts and all. If they had trouble in the war, that we let them go for a tell. And they, the boats that they came on, some of them were rusty clunkers of things and broke down. And then they copped racism here in Australia. They couldn't speak the language. It was a real uphill battle. But, boy, you know, the thing that I've found about the migrants is they were so – their tenacity was amazing. And their will and their drive to keep – their work ethic was just amazing, and they realised, hey, this country, we can actually work hard, make money and get a house quickly, you know, so, which they couldn't have done back home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the migrants you've interviewed is Ellie Dauger. She's Dutch. Let's have a listen.
Dad wanted to come to Australia because he tried to always make a life for himself in Holland. Because of the setback of my mum always being sick and TB, and he just couldn't get a, he couldn't get, have a go in Holland for no matter what he tried. And my memories of Wanagila, I was quite happy there. There were like big tin sheds. Not that I was upset about it. But, yeah, they're very cramped because we had two big sheds to us because we came with 10 children and mum and dad, but they were very upset. They hated it. And then the food up there was like prison food. I was married in 1966. I have 4 children, 2 boys, 2 girls, and now I have 22 grandchildren.
Yeah, wow, big family now. I'm wondering her story. You interviewed many migrants from different backgrounds. Are they all some sort of the same? Do they have the same experience?
No, that's the thing. You get different ones from different. Yes, I think that's what makes it so fascinating when you come and see this or you see the live show is that, yes, there are similarities, but then there are others that are quite different. And Ellie was actually one of the first people I interviewed. And I remember when I arrived, I put my recording gear out on the front lawn ready to come in, and the husband came out and he said, I don't know what you're expecting today, but she doesn't remember anything. And then I said, well, you know, my heart dropped because I'm thinking this is one of my first ones I'm ready to do. Yeah. I switched it on and you know what? She just re-entered all that again because she was about 18 when she came out. So she's got very vivid memories. Mm. And in her case, her mother had TB and her father was trying to look after, like, work. And then she had, because they had 10 children, Ellie had to actually leave her schooling at quite a young age and look after the whole family. So it was a very tragic set of circumstances. And as you said in that sound clip, she said that the father just couldn't get his act together because there was no jobs. There was depression all across Holland. He wanted to find something new. But other people had actually had other experiences. Look, I have never mentioned and I've cut them because they came here because they committed a crime and then tried to race away. And some others had big fallouts with their family because they said they would come. So that no one is exactly the same. But I think the overarching thing is that the war really did was the final push for them to say, look, you know, I was born here. I love my country. And all of them love their country. They never say, I'm sick of this country. I'm going. But the war had been the last straw. And, of course, if you looked around and saw every single house broken and burnt, you'd be thinking, well, how many years is this going to take to rebuild, and how long is it going to be till I can bring my family up and make them, you know, have them as prosperous people in society.
And that country on the other side of the world, I don't know, can't be worse than this.
No. Well, I must admit, though, they pretty much all wanted to go to America because they'd seen Hollywood films and they thought, this is the promised land. The others were Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and South Africa. So that these were sort of the splits of the countries. And some of them even had signed up to go to Canada. And then in the case of, you know, Dr. Carl from ABC, he was going to come and he got sick. And so instead of going to Canada, they said, well, you're going to be on the next ship and that's going to Australia. And they didn't know anything about Australia. But so with what their choice was, they got chucked onto another ship. So they ended up in Australia. So it was more of a lucky dip in a way, yeah.
Mm. So for the past couple of years, Simon, this has been a big part of your life, a podcast,
yes,
a theatre show, now a documentary. Is it now time to let it go, or do you have more plans with Bond Villa?
No, I can't let it go. In fact, I've become really good friends with all of them because I just read a review of my show, the film, yesterday, and the person said, we ended up falling in love with all the people as we went through, and they felt like they were part of our family. And that's what's happened with me. I now get invitations to 90th birthday parties because they have felt a real unburdening. Because some of them, because they haven't told their children, because of the war and the ugly bits that they went through, they held on to it for all this time. And I think, I don't know, somehow I'm very excitable and I want to learn things from them. So I really, you know, get really excited. I'll go, wow, really? You know, and I'm really just that sort of excitable guy that they end up sharing. They end up telling me things. And I think they often feel, oh, I've got it off my chest. I've let go of something. I mean, I've learned so much from them. There's to think that even though they went through the really hard times they went through, they still have a sense of humor. They tell, that's why it's not all doom and gloom. There is bits mixed in there that are quite funny and you'll laugh. I mean, I say you'll cry, you'll laugh, but most of all, you'll be really inspired by these gutsy pioneers who came to a country they knew nothing about.
Wil je nog meer soortgelijke verhalen? Luister via Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify of waar je je podcasts dan ook vandaan haalt.